Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is veteran elementary school teacher and children's book author Molly Nero. Her newly released book, titled Smarty Pig, is designed to teach kids how to create games in their home to help them to understand that learning is not just for school, it is for life. Good morning, Molly. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing well, and thank you so much for having me on your show.
You have some wonderful things to talk about in your book, and I'm really excited about that. Your approach in teaching children is very interesting. Smarty Pig is a very engaging book, and I like the fact that you use the kitchen in it as well. So congratulations.
Thank you. It's amazing what we have in our own home that we can use to help reinforce the skills that our children are learning at school.
Wonderful. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, I was fortunate. I was the youngest of seven children. I grew up in Arlington, Texas, near where actually you are right now.
Yes.
I have five brothers, so it was definitely a world of cowboys and Indians, cops and robbers, and G.I. Joes at our house quite regularly. I began loving music and dancing and the old musicals that my parents would play on the stereo at a young age and began performing in high school. So out of high school, I ended up in college with a music degree, singing and doing more musical theater performing. But I always had a love for children. I had always babysat and helped at our church nursery and things like that. So my life ended up developing two loves, love of music and love for children. When I got out of college, I decided that I really did want to go into teaching and started in the elementary school near Austin, Texas, in Round Rock, and was fortunate to be in the fourth grade classroom for 5 years, where the experience of writing with my students actually started developing my own love of writing. I loved it, but I was getting pulled back to my second love, which was music, and I was fortunate enough to be able to teach music in that school for the next 11 years. So I took my love of performing that I used to do in the musicals and started doing 6 musical productions at my school each year so that every child had a chance to be on stage every year, and that entire grade levels, which was usually well over 100 children at a time, mm-hmm. would work together to put on a musical production for their parents. And it was an incredibly, it was just amazing to watch their faces mm-hmm. and the excitement and to help them understand the passion and love I had for performing. So that was about a good chunk of my life down there in Austin, Texas. My husband at the time was also in the symphony. So our home was filled with music, and we had a change happen where my husband had to retire about 5 years ago, and we decided to move back to his hometown, which is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So after a lifetime of 110-degree heat mm-hmm. and the Texas sun, I have been enjoying snow in wintertime and sledding with my children and building snowmen in my backyard. So I have just had a blast with that. People are not understanding why I would ever want to leave Texas for snow and all the cold up here, but it's been wonderful. The challenge has been, though, is that I do not have the certification to continue teaching here.
Mm-hmm.
So after, you know, asking the state what was required, I decided that it was a good time to get back to my writing, and I had actually mm-hmm. started about 8 years ago writing Smarty Pig.
Mm-hmm.
The Smarty
mm-hmm.
Pig was actually finished here in Pennsylvania, and I feel like I am being led down a new career path, and all that I have done in the past is coming together, And the one thing that I want to do is to be able to reach more children than just the children sitting in front of me. The books are a way to do that.
Fantastic. How has learning been taught when you were growing up compared to what it is right now?
Well, the one thing I do remember when I was in elementary school, which is where all of my experience has been, is that, and I specifically remember fourth grade. That was a very pivotal year for me. I really loved that time. When I would go to math class or it was time for reading, I remember that I went to another classroom with students who had similar ability levels.
Mm-hmm.
So I was actually a very top, a high student is what you would call us now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would go to a room with other children at the same ability, and that's, you know, we would be taught to our ability and be pushed on. And children who were at different levels went to different rooms. Nowadays, teachers are expected and required to teach a classroom filled with the lowest to the highest.
Mm-hmm.
And there are pros and cons to everything, but it takes an incredibly dedicated teacher to be able to lift those lower learners up to where they need to be, meeting those minimum expectations, and at the same time be challenging those high learners to be pushed a little bit further so they're actually growing in their learning and still maintain those middle learners.
Mm-hmm.
So I really feel like teachers nowadays have quite a challenge on their plates, having all those different levels to be you know, tackling in every subject all day.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Did you find children's book beneficial to you when you were a child?
Well, now you have to remember, when I was a child, there were no iPods or iPads or iPhones or iBooks or iTunes. It was just what I say, me, myself, and I. So, yes, I spent quite a bit of time reading. My mother would faithfully every week take us to the public library where we would be allowed to check out a new stack of books. And believe me, with five brothers in the house, especially my three younger brothers, you know, who would kidnap my Barbie dolls or, you know, hold them for ransom with G.I. Joe and things like that, I really looked forward to having an escape with the books.
Mm-hmm.
So there was always a stack of books next to my bed.
Very interesting. Do you have a favorite one and why?
Well, I would have to say that any favorites I had as a child have kind of mingled in with the favorites that I have found for my children.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult for me to pick a favorite because children's literature, children's books are just so amazing. I have been inspired by so many authors of children's books, the illustrations, the stories. It's been amazing. Everything from, you know, Harry the Dirty Dog to Madeline. You've got Franklin. You've got Arthur. There's just so many wonderful books out there for children that I would hate to say that I had a favorite.
Of course, your book was very well done. The illustration in it is just fantastic. And I know that you had someone else do your illustration. So who did you get to do your illustration?
Yes. Well, the whole publication of this book has just been an amazing experience for me. My son, I'm going to take you on a little story here.
Mm-hmm.
My son was having difficulty at school, and we decided to put him in a Christian school here in Bethel Park. And I was really struggling with Smarty Pig because I had tried the unsolicited manuscript way of trying to get published through a major publishing house, which, of course, gives you the wonderful rejection letters that you just kind of go, okay, here's another one, and you stick it in the file. So I had become very discouraged and was actually doing a lot of praying about it, not knowing where to go. A mother in my son's new classroom had published a book through Halo Publishing Company and told me about it. Well, when I contacted Halo, they immediately saw the value in the message of Smarty Pig. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they had connected with Monique Turcaine, which is who I chose to be my illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
They sent me pictures that she had done in her portfolio, and it was exactly what I wanted. I was I've mentioned his name already. David McPhail just had a tremendous impact on me. Mm-hmm. And his illustrations and his stories are just so wonderful. And I wanted an illustrator who used what I would call old school, mm-hmm. not the digital work that you see, which is wonderful. But my mother is an artist. My daughter is an artist. And I wanted that hands-on watercolor pencil kind of drawing mm-hmm. for my book, which mm-hmm. is exactly what Monique does. So I was just thrilled. Everything has just come together beautifully. And in fact, she has just finished the illustrations for the second Smarty Pig book.
Fantastic.
Yes. Very excited.
How has teaching children evolved over the years?
Well, I think what's happening, unfortunately, is there was a time, now remember, I was teaching about 20 years ago, and we were very much into creative, hands-on teaching, experiential teaching, where the children were experiencing the skill that they were learning. And that was when the state testing was really coming in strong. Now, back then in Texas, it was known as the TAAS test, T-A-A-S. Mm-hmm. And it just became more and more to where so much is riding on these test scores that, unfortunately, I think that has pulled us away from the creative learning environment that so many children blossom in. Mm-hmm. We have so much paper and pencil going on to make sure that those children are prepared for the tests, that they know the format of the test. Now, everything that the children are being tested on, the teachers have to teach anyway. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people say, oh, the teachers are teaching for the test. That's not the case. The skills that the teachers are teaching is the curriculum of that grade level. It's just mm-hmm. that everything is so geared for that all-important test that the worksheets are formatted for the test and the questions are formatted like the test. And I'm just afraid that a lot of the creativity that I have felt is so necessary in our mm-hmm. elementary kids' learning experience has been kind of taken away from them because of these demands that are made on the teachers and on the schools.
Very interesting. Why did you write Smarty Pig?
When I became the music teacher at my school, mm-hmm. I was able to develop a very different relationship with all of my students. Now, the school at the time was about 600 children, and at that time I saw all 600 children for music. I became the very unconventional teacher. There were no chairs because I wanted the kids to be able to get up and dance. I wanted them to actually move around and get out of that structured classroom setting when they were with me. Mm-hmm. I would even go so far as when I actually passed out papers, I would fling them across the room, and the kids would just squeal. They thought it was so amazing that a teacher would fling papers across the room, and they would all try to catch one before they dropped to the ground. So I kind of made a very risk-free environment for the kids. Well, they would come to me after these tests, and I just saw an apathy beginning to grow in our youngest learners. It's all for the test. Why do we have to do this? All we do is take tests. And the joy of learning was starting to leave those kids. Well, if we're losing the joy of learning in 7, 8, 9-year-old children, what's going to happen later on down the road? When, you know, in middle school and high school, that apathy continues to grow. You know, we need to be building up our children. We need to help them understand that learning is not just for school, that all the things you learn in school, you mm-hmm. use in life, which is what Smarty Pig is all about.
Very interesting. And who did you intend the book for?
The book is intended for the kindergarten through about third grade age level.
Mm-hmm.
I really am working on trying to reach that age group. And the Smarty Pig series will be dealing with issues that those young children are dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of us drop our kids off at school and we say, bye, honey, have a good day. But our kids are the ones walking through those doors.
Mm-hmm.
And they are dealing with so much, not just the academic pressure, that we're putting on elementary children. They're dealing with the peer pressure. They're dealing with bullying situations. They're dealing with special needs children and trying to understand how to be friends with everyone. There is so much, and just being overwhelmed. So Smarty Pig and her family are going to be dealing with different issues like that for that age children.
What is the most difficult part about getting children motivated to learn, though?
Kids need to understand that what they're learning relates to them personally. I think the biggest thing any dedicated teacher and any successful and effective teacher will tell you is that you have to relate to their lives. You have to stay on top of what is the latest craze, what are they watching on TV, what is the latest video game, because then you're letting them know that their life is important and what they're doing is important. So if you can take a skill that you're learning, or say you're working on a story, if you can pull an episode of, let's say, SpongeBob or Phineas and Ferb off the TV and say, hey, you guys, you know, I watched Phineas and Ferb yesterday, and this is kind of how it went. Now, can we determine the plot of the cartoon yesterday? What was the conflict? What was the cause and effect that happened? You know, our kids are bombarded by visual stimulation, and their world is built on that entertainment value. How many kids do you see walking around with some kind of electrical device in their hand? It's a DS, or it's an iPod, or they're sitting in front of some kind of a monitor or television. So if you can connect what that world to the school world, you're going to be a much more effective teacher because you're relating it to what they're doing and what is in their little world.
You're basically engaging them to the reality part of living, pretty much.
Exactly.
Very interesting. Please share with us the creative ways you use items in the house as teaching aids. And I thought that was very interesting because how you incorporate just about everything in the house, and my favorite, of course, is the kitchen.
Well, I will take you back into the kitchen a little bit then. I've actually recently written a blog about how do you make studying fun for children. Well, it's not so much fun as it is giving learning purpose. If you give purpose to what they're learning and they understand where they're going to use it in day-to-day life, then they have a reason to learn it. So, for example, if you are going to order pizza for dinner, then maybe your multiplication or division students, who, you know, we're talking second, third grade, can determine what size of pizza is going to give the family enough pieces. You can turn, like we did in Smarty Pig, you can turn your kitchen into a grocery store. Or you can use cooking as a great example to reinforce measurement values. The kitchen is great. The pantry is a great place for your little emergent reader. You know, you can ask your little first and second grader or even kindergartner to go into the pantry and find a can or a box of something specific, and then, you know, they have to sound things out. It's right there in front of them. It gives them reason to actually learn how to read, to learn how to sound things out, because they're getting something that mom needs to make dinner. Or they're measuring and helping mom, you know, make a recipe. Well, why else do you need to know half cup, quart, gallon? There has to be a reason for these kids to buy into learning and to understand that, this mentality of, everything's such a drag. You know, homework's a drag. It's awful. It's, you know, why do I want to do it? Well, this is why. Because in life, mom needs to be able to measure, you know, dad needs to be able to, you know, dad needs to be able to read directions. And so look around your home. If your child is doing measurement, have them measure a photo to make sure that you have the right size picture frame. If they're reading, have them read boxes of cereal. You know, look at the ingredients. See if they can find words, what we call sight words, in the newspaper or in a magazine. If you've got little ones who are just learning letter recognition, well, instead of turning the DVD on inside the car, have them look at street signs, have mm-hmm. them look at shop signs, and find letters. Have them look around the house for hidden letters on things. You know, video games have letters on them. How many mm-hmm. times do you think you have X in your house? Well, in my house, the big X is on the Xbox, and you've got two of them. So, you know, and it's, you can make it into a game. You can make it fun for them and mm-hmm. have them realize it's right in front of them.
In reading your book is the fact that you have these kids, in this case, all the Smutty Pigs group, the gang,
mm-hmm.
play roles, different things that they're doing, and someone will be in the lead and someone does something else. And now that translates to real-life situation because I feel like a child learns more by playing certain roles and they understand subject matters much better. What are your thoughts about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You learn more by doing than by listening or reading. And you can do that in so many different ways. Now, yesterday, actually, I worked with a young child who was really struggling with comprehension of stories that she was reading.
Mm-hmm.
So what I asked her to do was to role play the story with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would read some, and then we would role play it, and she got to be one of the characters, and I was one of the characters. And by the end of the story, that child could answer questions and details that she had not been able to do before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because she became one of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
When you go out and you watch kids play, that's a skill they're losing.
Mm-hmm.
When we have so many of these video games and the toys that actually are not very interactive, the
mm-hmm.
toy actually determines how the play goes because it is some electrical toy or it is a doll that does some specific thing, it loses some of that role-playing with the child. And so I highly encourage parents and teachers to do more role-playing because it does solidify the skill because the child is actually doing it.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And what I like also in your book is the fact that this is what I'm getting now from a standpoint of an adult. I notice that, well, somebody's got to take the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were teaching leadership in some ways at a very young age of taking charge, so to speak.
Exactly. And the one thing, another thing about Smarty Pig is that before she does that, take that leadership role, they actually make fun of her.
Mm-hmm.
And so your listeners understand the Smarty Pig title comes from the other pigs making fun of her while she studies. But then they turn to her for help, and she takes control and says, look, I will help you all I can, but you have to try your best to try to understand. And she more than willingly takes the lead, even though some of the pigs are younger, some of them a little bit older. She's happy to share what she knows and to head them in the right direction. And if you notice in the book, the things that she does, they're very simple, just like
mm-hmm.
taking the kitchen and making it into a grocery store, because counting change and counting money is a life skill that actually is very difficult for children to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Counting back change is a difficult skill. So when you're actually role-playing it, and she set that up and helped them through it, it also gives them confidence, it builds self-esteem, and they're reinforcing the skill they're learning at school. Then she goes into the dining room table, and she is there, and that's actually one of the illustrations I just love so much.
Mm-hmm.
She's there with her safety goggles, and she's measuring things and mixing them up. And again, she's not afraid to step forward and say, okay, this is what I know, this is how we can learn it, I want to help you. And that's something that we always want our children to be willing to do, is to help others. So I feel like Smarty Pig is a really good example of that.
Very true. The other underlying factor I like about the book is the fact that it engages the child to be concerned about other people, other
mm-hmm.
children. And when you talk about toys, when you talk about even learning aids these days, you have a child with the iPod, the child with the children's iPad, which they are coming out right now, which is fantastic. But at the same time, you're talking about isolation, where there's no human interaction.
Well, it's interesting that you brought that up, because that is something else that I love to bring to people's attention, is we all are thinking that quality family time means that we're all in the house together.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a time when maybe that did breed, you know, quality time with the family, but nowadays, is it truly quality time when one child is on the computer, another child is playing video games, mom's watching TV, or dad's on a computer somewhere else, and we are all isolated within the home?
Mm-hmm.
How is that? That is not quality time with your family. That is each person isolated, doing their own thing, and that's, to me, I think that we all need to be very careful, because I think that the family unit is starting to come apart because of that isolation. And you're correct. These learning tools that they're coming out with and different games and things, it does isolate our children away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that people are understanding that we need to be right there with our children. And to me, homework is a time when you can actually create quality time with your child. It is an attitude that has to be changed, where you can look at working with your child, walking around the house, measuring things together. You know, maybe it's just changing where you do homework. Maybe you need to sit under the table one night and be silly, mm-hmm. and have fun with it, or sit outside, or sit in a tent to do homework, to make it fun, to break up this attitude that it's, you know, this horrible, awful thing. Or how many parents do you know would say, "Did you get your homework done? Go do your homework." You know, whereas you need to be sitting there. Do they understand? Do mm-hmm. they understand why they need it? And that would help pull the family unit together a little bit and pull away from that isolation that seems to be growing in our society.
Very true. And what I like, though, when you talk about something like that, you are introducing fun back into the teaching aspects of children and so forth, and you're engaging the children with you in terms of connecting the human factor, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that is just so imperative nowadays. Our kids need us. There's a time when, you know, you ask your child, "Oh, how was your day today?" "It was fine." "What did you learn?" "Oh, nothing." "Really?" You know, it's okay to sit there and go, "No, I want to know. Well, what did you do at recess?" "Oh, I just played." "Who did you play with? What did you play? Show me what you learned in math today."
Right.
Do a problem. Teach me what you learned. What was your story about? Be interested, because if you don't open up that dialogue when you're dealing with your elementary children, mm-hmm. what's going to happen when your teenager is on Facebook and Twitter, mm-hmm. and you don't have that dialogue already started? And, you know, that's the time when it's the scariest for parents, because unfortunately our children are so influenced by so many others by that point.
Right.
So I think just more interaction between parents and children is just vital, especially at those young years.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting, it's coming full circle, because you had mentioned once before the key to getting children motivated to learning, and you being the teacher not only in school, in this case in your home, is the fact that you're getting into their world. And the way you engage these questions to the child, if you are interrogating them of their day, then that's what you're going to get, that typical answer from an interrogation standpoint of view. Or if you're engaging them because you want to be part of that world that they're in, then you get a different response.
Exactly. Exactly. And the children, you know, children nowadays, they want to know that they're important, and they mm-hmm. want to know that what they enjoy and who they're playing with and their friends are important to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, absolutely.
Wonderful. Your book has an interesting rhyme to it. Please read a couple of sections to give us a flavor of its content.
Well, I would love to. Thank you. I am going to choose, it's about in the middle of the book,
mm-hmm.
and this is after we have been introduced to Smarty Pig, and we understand that the rest of the family has pretty much given up on homework and doesn't try anymore. And so this is the natural consequence. Several weeks later, their report cards finally came. All the other piggies hung their heads down in shame. On each of their report cards, a red F filled each space. They had flunked every subject. They were a disgrace. I just don't understand math, and I really, really tried. When I subtract, it doesn't work, one teary piggy cried. It's just not fair. My spelling words are hard, another whined. My science projects never work. I'm just not the smart kind. What does it matter anyway? We'll never use this stuff. They make us learn it just for tests. His voice was rather gruff. Just then, that red-haired piggy walked with pride into the room. Her report card had all A's, and her smile brightened the gloom. To say that you don't need these skills, well, that just isn't right. You have to read and know math facts for many things in life. How come you always get good grades? They all begin to ask. What do you do? Can you show us? Please help me with my math. It's really not that hard, and I'll help you all I can. But first, you must agree to try your best to understand. So Smarty Pig begins to help them. And I just love that part because the natural consequence, of course, is if you don't try, you're not going to succeed. And so, you know, the natural consequence for them was they got bad grades on the report card.
It's fantastic. You do a wonderful job in reading. So I'm really hoping that you are doing a bunch of reading in various libraries and so forth.
I am just starting. I have started booking author visits and working on book signings and library visits. So this is a whole new world to me, and I am thrilled to be in it. So, you know, just getting started and getting out there. But it's wonderful because I get to bring my theater background into into what I do with this. And I actually, when I work with children and I do school visits, I'm not one to sit and read the book. I have a whole program I do. Now, you will laugh. I know I have an unusual last name, which is Nero. So whenever I taught kindergartners and they would get confused as to who I was, I was always known as Miss Nero the Hero. So that is how I always go into schools. And when I, you know, working on my author visit program, I have created a puzzle. And so I help children understand with each piece of the puzzle, we talk about how we use different subjects in school and how we put them into practice in life. And so when you put all the puzzle pieces together, which the children will help me do, in the middle, once they're all put together, you see the word life, and all around it are the subject areas. So I really try to connect to the kids. It's like I get to teach a lesson again. And I feel like I'm just in a much larger classroom. So it's an absolute thrill to me. I feel like all of my past experiences are all coming together with the Smarty Pig books.
Wonderful. How long did it take for you to write Smarty Pig?
Smarty Pig began one night. My son was one, and it was during the Christmas holidays, and I was reading to him as I did every night. And as I put him to bed, the idea and the story was just flooding my thought. I knew exactly what I wanted to write, and I put him to bed, and I went into another room where we had the computer, and my daughter was sitting there singing the songs of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer along with the little video that was going on, and I sat at the computer and just wrote down everything that was coming to me. So Smarty Pig started about 7.5, almost 8 years ago. Of course, when you're working full-time, I had two young children. My husband worked in the evenings and on the weekends. You know, it's very difficult to find time to really focus and to write. And so back then it was difficult to get it finished. I would walk the track at my school during my lunchtime talking into a digital recorder, and I'm sure that many parents driving by were looking at me going, oh, Miss Nero, what is the matter with you? Because I'm sitting here talking to myself. But that was the time I had to try to keep working on the book. And I finally was able to get it finished. Once we moved here to Pittsburgh, I was able to sit and really focus and finish it. So it was actually finished 3 years ago. And like I said, you know, I tried doing the publication, but we got started in September to get it published. So,
Well, congratulations again. I mean, now that it's out there, so I'm sure pretty soon you're going to really have an opportunity to speak more and more about this wonderful book.
Oh, thank you. I'm hoping so. It's meant to help, and that's what the whole Smarty Pig series will be, is what can I do to help children in that world of those little kindergartners? You know, we're talking ages 5 through 9-year-olds that deal with so much.
What are some of the feedback you have received on your book?
Well, I have had some wonderful reviews. I had a dad who does a homeschooling blog, and his word was kudos. And I thought, well, that was a fun word. What's been wonderful is I've heard that they love that it showed children what it felt like to do the right thing when friends didn't agree. What it felt to take the time to study with real life examples that you would use the skills for. That was another positive comment about Smarty Pig. And something else I thought was wonderful was that Smarty Pig didn't turn away from those asking for help, even though they teased her. But she only asked them to do the best they could. That's one thing that we've got to remember with children, is that you want to encourage them to do the best of their ability. Not what you expect, not what the teacher expects. What can they do? And a lot of times, they're going to surprise you. So it's been a wonderful month of being on the World of Ink book tour, and I've just had some wonderful responses. So
that's great. That's wonderful. Again, what your book make people realize, or certainly for me, is the fact that it's the human factor. There's a lot more social science in the book that. Maybe perhaps I'm an adult, I read it differently, but I certainly see the interaction, the leadership role, the camaraderie among groups of children working together.
Well, and that is a skill that they're trying, you know, you try to teach that in school. You try to help the children understand that they have to work together. The problem is what you've already touched on, is most games, most entertainment is very isolated.
Right.
And so children don't have to play with someone else to be playing. And I've even dealt with that with my own son. He's 9 years old, and he does enjoy, you know, his video game time. But when a friend comes over, he doesn't want to lose. He's not always willing to play with someone else because, you know, then he has to share that experience, which is not always what he wants to do. And so in schools, you're asked to work in groups. You're, you know, taught that each person needs a chance to lead. Those are difficult skills to teach on top of the fact that you're, you know, going against what they're doing at home for entertainment. So, you know, leadership is so important. And it's amazing when you give a child a chance to be a leader. It's sometimes they, like I said, they surprise you.
One of the most important things also about your book is that it brings back the opportunity for parents to be involved with the child's life and basically to be in the teaching role. After all, you are a teacher, whether you like it or not. If you have a child, you are a teacher of that child for life, but certainly for the first 18 years of that child's life while the child is living underneath your roof. If you're buying something for the child to entertain himself or herself or to teach or self-taught in this case, then you're taking that role away, the opportunity of you being a teacher for the child.
Exactly, exactly. And I don't think that parents nowadays are as aware of the personal interaction that our children need as much as they used to be. There's just so much keeping us busy these days that I think that a lot of people forget that they need to sit down and work with their child. And it will also validate, again, the learning that the child is doing and why they need to do it in the first place. If mom and dad is sitting here saying, oh, well, I do this at work, or, hey, look at the report I have to do.
Very true. So what kind of feedback have you gotten from Claire and Nicholas?
Oh, my kids are amazing. My daughter, as I stated before, is actually an artist. She's 15, well, she actually turned 16 next week, and she is very gifted. So she is my art critic. She actually, when I first got the original sketches, she took them and she added things to the house, and she would comment and oh, Mom, we need to do this, and ask her to change that. And so she has been a tremendous, critic, I guess you could say, but she would add, you know, constructive criticism to all the artwork. And my son is actually helping me do rhyme now. The second book that we're working, that we've worked on, is called Smarty Pig and the Test-Taking Terror. Now that story is done, and that will be out hopefully in March, is what we're planning. And the third book in the series is about bullying. Now, unfortunately, both of my children went through a bullying experience. My daughter with friends, my son physical bullying on the bus. So I have been, you know, putting that into the story with the pigs, and both of the kids were very important and had a lot of feedback with how I worded things and how I set those scenarios up in the book. So it's definitely been a family event here with the Smarty Pig books, and they're very excited about them.
Very interesting. How about your parents?
My mother is the only one who has left, and she is thrilled. She actually lives with me now. She has her own home on the bottom floor of our home, and she has just been one of my biggest cheerleaders. She and my husband have, you know, they are behind me the whole way, so it's been wonderful.
Great. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, the book is available on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, anywhere where they can order online. We also, you also can go to Halo Publishing, and their website has the book in their bookstore. And then we have SmartyPigBooks.com, and that is where I have posted reviews. I have, that's where you can purchase the book. I have little examples for the children about why they need to learn some of the skills that they're learning, and that's where you can stay in touch with where we'll be going and the new books coming out.
Very interesting. As a veteran teacher of 18 years, what advice do you have for someone who is interested in becoming an elementary school teacher?
I think elementary school teachers must be flexible, and they have to have a big, what you could call a big bag of tricks. Young children learn in many different ways. Some of them need to have that the building blocks in front of them that they can actually handle. Some of them need to have visual examples. Others need to be up and walking around the room. So if you are going to teach elementary, you've got to be willing to try and try and try again and come up with the different ways. And you've got to stay connected to what your kids are doing, what they're watching, what they love. Go to a soccer game. Go see a movie with, you know, someone's, you know, little child, a friend, a niece, a nephew. Go see some of the things that your kids are seeing. That makes you relevant to their lives because you understand what they love. You've actually taken the time to go see. And so, you know, what you say has more relevance to them because you're interested in their lives and what they like. You know, it's not exactly a whole lot of fun to watch somebody play video games, but now I understand the video game, so when the kids are talking about it at school, I can relate to it. I can say something about it. Or, you know, I can even say, well, I've tried it, but I get, you know, somebody shoots me every time, or I crash my car, or whatever. But you've got to stay in touch with your children and relate the skills that you're teaching to their lives. Find a way. So that would be my biggest piece of advice.
Basically, let them draw out the inner child in you, right?
Absolutely. I'm never going to grow up. Hey, I am the mom who is out there sledding in the snow. I'm the one out there throwing snowballs and building snowmen with my children. So, you know, hey.
Why not? That's right.
That's right.
Are there any suggestions on how to improve the current teaching system?
Well, unfortunately, I think that the testing has kind of taken over our schools. And if there was anything that I could do to improve them, it would be getting back to allowing the children to be more creative. Mm-hmm. I can honestly say I do not think my son has been asked to do a book report from a library book his entire elementary experience. He has not been asked to make a project that wasn't basically hand-fed, and he was told exactly what to do. And my son is very creative. In fact, what I started doing is just allowing him to do things at home as though he would be doing it for a project at school and encouraging that creativity. You know, what happened to having the chicks in the classrooms with the heat lamp where the children actually watch the chick come out of the egg? Things like that, where children are actually seeing the butterflies hatching out of, you know, that's being lost because we don't have the time. We don't have the resources. Well, maybe we need to make the time. Maybe that's something that's really important. And so that's what I would do.
Interesting concept. How has writing this book impacted you personally?
Well, I've had to reinvent myself. And I never thought after teaching for all those years that I wouldn't still be teaching. I assumed I would teach and teach and teach. So not being able to do that here has caused me to turn a page. And now I look at my life differently. I look at my experiences differently. And I just want to use all the knowledge that I have and all those years of experience with those kids to help make things a little better, to help lift them up a little bit, to give them a voice that says, yes, somebody understands, and maybe here's a solution.
You're obviously a wonderful teacher when you were in the classroom, so now you're just taking it to a different level.
Exactly, and that's what my desire was with this book, is I wanted to reach more children than just the children sitting in front of me.
Is there a reason why you focus on the elementary age student?
Well, that has been the focus of my life as an adult, as I have been in the elementary classrooms. So somewhere down the road, someone said, write about what you know. And that is the one piece of writing advice I have always listened to. Well, there's nothing I know better than the elementary classroom, the elementary child. Remember that my school, when I left, had almost 800 children in it. That was kindergarten through fifth grade.
Fantastic.
So lots of children, lots of experiences, and so that's why I've headed in that direction.
Very interesting. What can we expect from you in 2012?
Well, Smarty Pig, with the bullying situation, I would love to see come out this year. And also, the fourth book in the Smarty Pig series is going to be dealing with autism. And I am asking parents who are dealing and challenged with facing that disease and having to, you know, go into the classrooms with an autistic child, how can I help? Because I have had so many experiences with autistic children in the classroom, and I want to bridge the gap between typical children and autistic children and help them find a way to be friends and help typical children see past the autism and realize that there's a young kid right in front of them. There's a friend right there, but they have to get past the autism. And so I'm reaching out to several families and special education teachers, and we are going to be working on that book with the Smarty Pig characters. There is also another series that will be coming out with that is geared for little preschool boys, and that is called Roger and His Rocket, and my daughter is actually illustrating that book. So we are very excited about 2012. It's going to be a big year for this.
Fantastic. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Absolutely. There's one thing that I learned working with children is when you look at them and you say, well, it was your choice to do homework, or it was your choice not to do the homework. I realized I was saying that word choice all the time. And then I realized I had to look at my own life and say, well, what choices am I making?
Mm-hmm.
And it made me wake up and realize that when you open your eyes in the morning, you have a choice to smile. You have a choice to hug your children. You have a choice to make a difference in someone else's life. Or you have the choice not to. So choose. Make a good choice. And that's the way to live. Choose to smile. Share your smiles with everyone. Choose to be a happy person, even when everything around you is bringing you down, is frustrating you. You can still stop and choose to smile. And that's what my recipe for living is.
Fantastic. It's wonderful. Very simple, precise, and it's direct to the point, and basically making choices in the present moment. That's wonderful. Any final thoughts?
If there is anyone who is dealing with autism in their family, they are welcome to come to my website. Send me an email at mollynero@smartypigbooks.com if they would like to be a part of this conversation about the next Smarty Pig book in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to meet or go to schools if people would like to invite us to come. That would
mm-hmm.
be wonderful.
What's your email address again?
It's mollynero@smartypigbooks.com.
Coming back to your book, one of the things that you have done is, besides engaging a lot of participants in doing things in the various examples that you've used in the book, is this something that you're going to try to continue to build upon, trying to get away from the fact that parents are now choosing toys that are just a one-to-one? And we talked about this before, the isolation aspects of it. Are you going to continue to go in a different direction in terms of, no, we need to start engaging more and more with the children?
No, I think engaging is what's important. And in the next, even in the next book, one of the pigs, little Petey Pig, is terrified of taking tests. He does great on his homework, but when a test is set on his desk, he just panics. Well, in the book, Smarty Pig stands right there with him and walks him through two strategies that I have actually used with children to overcome their fear and panic when they're dealing with tests. And so again, we have that connection and interaction, that relationship that's going on for help. So absolutely. Parents, it's just imperative that you help your child understand that you're right there with them. And how best can you do that? Words are so easy to say, and they're fast, and I love you, and have a nice day, and oh yeah, I'm here. Sit down with them. Sit down and read a book together. Even if you're watching TV, sit down together. I know all of us don't want to spend our night, you know, watching a child's TV show, but how much more important is it that you sit with them and hold their hand or snuggle with them for a minute than if you go off and do the dishes? You're never going to get that time back. Our children grow up so quickly, and we need to continue that interaction. And you're being a leader. You're being a parent. You're being an example. And isn't that the kind of example you want to be? Someone who's right there for your child.
And what's interesting with your example just now, this is where the quality versus the quantity of time spent is crucial. So you're not watching the whole necessary episode every night, but you might do it one or two nights. And then the rest of the time, you might be there for about 5-10 minutes. And then you can do your other thing and come back later and so forth, because in the child's mind, you care.
Right. Exactly. You know, so many times our kids just kind of go off and do their own thing because they can, with all that, you know, technology has brought to our world. But if you don't stop and make a point to be there, then that time is lost. They are by themselves, and they are isolated. And the more isolated they are, the more comfortable they become in it. And so they're not going to need that from you as much.
Any other advice for parents?
Try to look at homework in a different way. Try to look at homework as an opportunity to learn with your child. You know, it can be the best time of the day or it can be the worst. But the choice truly is up to the parent.
Wonderful. It's true that you should always outsource math, science, chemistry, but don't outsource love.
And what's the best way to show love is by spending time together. You know, how many of us come home from work and we've worked for 8 hours and we just want to come home and relax, but, oh, no, sorry, you have to do more work tonight. You know, wouldn't we all be grouchy? And, you know, when our kid comes home after being at school all day, they don't want to do any more work, but here they have homework. And, you know, who wouldn't be grouchy? So sit down, spend some time, show them you care, you know, make their learning relevant, or just sit there. My daughter turns 16 next week, and I still sit with her, and I help her with homework. I help her study for tests. Now, she's studying, you know, advanced placement European history, mm-hmm. which I don't even know most of it, but I am still sitting there with her, helping her, and she knows I love her. She yeah. knows it's important to me that she does the best she can, so I am there to support her. I sit with my son. He does not need my help. Mm-hmm. I'm very blessed. He's a bright little guy, but I still sit with him, and I make sure he knows that I think it's important, and I support him, and I'm there for him, and it's just something we all need to be doing more of.
Very true. And then again, it's not so much you needing to know European history. It's the fact that you care.
Yes.
That's the most important thing.
Absolutely. Of course, it's fun being educated myself. As, you know, I'm sitting there reading all my daughter's notes. It's like, wow. Oh, that's what. Okay. It's been a while since I was in college. So, you know, high school is, I can actually admit that I'm a parent that went on a website called Algebra for Morons at the beginning of the school year because I did not understand what her Algebra 2 homework was. And we did end up getting some help, but I did everything I could to help her. And we will always have a good laugh over that one.
It's all about attitude, though. I think parents sometimes tend to think about, well, at least the parents that I've talked with lives in a crisis mode. We're always mm-hmm. thinking about yesterday and, of course, constantly planning for tomorrow. And we forget that the most important time, and like you were talking about, making the choice, is here now in the present moment. Because when a child is in front of us, or especially engaging us in the conversation, they are in the present moment.
Exactly. Absolutely. And they need that attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They need that attention from us. We are the ones who are guiding them. We are the ones who are teaching them how to respond or to react. And if you cannot stop and just look at your child and listen, what are you teaching them? You know, if you're constantly interrupting or kind of, okay, whatever, I'll deal with it later, well, you're not validating that what they're saying is important.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's the hardest thing as adults is to go, no, wait a minute. Okay, my five-year-old is telling me about something that happened at school that, you know, it's nothing I need to be thinking about. I have this meeting or I have this or that or the other or, you know. You've got to stop and look at that child and listen. And that's
Very
the
true.
Example we want to give.
Very true. Molly, thank you for the great recipe for living you have shared with us earlier and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be certified financial planner and author Ashley Parks. Her new book titled The Saving Seed, Growing a Financially Healthy Family Tree, teaches families how to create a good financial behavioral system that lasts forever. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. Molly, thank you again, and have a great day.
Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Thank you. Bye-bye.